Let's chant verse 1 of chapter 3. Even though there's a long introduction, I'll include the introduction into the verse. So.
Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna Uvacha. Jayasi Chet Karmanaste.
Jayasi Chet Karmanaste.
Madha
buddhir janardana
tatkim karmani ghore mam
tatkim karmani ghore mam
niyojayasi keshava
niyojayasi keshava
jayasi chet karmanaha te madha buddhihi janardana Tatkim karmani gore mam niyojayasi keshava. Is it a typo?
I heard us
that. Yeah, it should be niyoja. Typo. Oops. Niyojayasi. So Arjuna, having had the teaching from Krishna, this is his question, and I'll kind of unfold why he has this question. So he says, Jayasi chet karmanaha te mata buddhihi Janardana. Yes, hey Janardana. Janardana is a name for Krishna. It means the one who gives pain to the people. As Karmapala. So Janardana, who is the one who through Karmapala causes people to suffer because of their adharma. So he says, hey Janardana, right? Decides to introduce him in that way. Hey Janardana. He says, the subject here is buddhihi. If jnanam is, if self-knowledge, if knowledge, jnanam, okay, buddhihi, if knowledge, te mata, in your opinion, or if you consider, mata means in your opinion, or according to you in your knowledge, if it's knowledge, if you consider that knowledge is jayasi, superior, is greater, superior, to karma. Karma has in the fifth, and then chait, if. So if you think that buddhihi, nominative 1-1, is superior, jayasi, nominative 1-1, to karma, karmanaha is fifth, okay, because of this comparative. So if you think that knowledge is superior to karma, tat kim karmani gore mam niyojayasi. E Keshava is another name for Arjuna. Why are you impelling me, or why are you're ordering me, impelling me, niyojayasi, mom, me? Why are you impelling me to do this terrible karma? What this karmani gore 7-1 the lokata? And why are you directing me toward this very very, very terrible, you know, gore, that's interesting, gore and gore. So toward this very terrible karma, why are you asking me to do this? So jayasi chait, if, hey Janardana, if knowledge, buddhihi, you consider, is your consideration, buddhihi is considered by you, te mata buddhihi, to be greater than karma, jayasi karmanaha, tat kim, then why? Why are you impelling me, or ordering me, directing me, toward this karma, which is so horrible, which is so terrible? So let's do the next verse. These two verses go together, and we'll talk about it.
Ya mishrene na vakye
Vyamishreneva vakyena
buddhim mohayasi vame
buddhim mohayasi vame
tadekam vada nischitya
tadekam vada nischitya
yena shreyo ham apnuyam
yena shreyo ham apnuyam.
So in the first verse he asked this question because he really is kind of legitimately confused, because he hasn't understood. That's why he's confused. But Bhagawan is directing him toward karma and praising knowledge. And after all, at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna surrendered to him, to Krishna, to gain knowledge, and wanted to run off to the forest and only devote himself fully to this knowledge, to gaining the self-knowledge. And now Krishna also is praising knowledge. His whole, the Sankhya Yoga in this chapter 2, he's praising this knowledge, and really that's the Brahmanishta. And even in the last verse, it's the Brahmanishta, you know, who abides in this knowledge and will never go to delusion again. It's the one who has Brahmanishta, who has this knowledge, who's residing in knowledge, in my own being, from knowledge. So all of these verses have led up to that. And it's the Brahmanishta, not the one who's doing karma. It's the Brahmanishta, you know, who gains this knowledge and remains in Brahman. And even if you're very old, says at the end, even if you're very old, you can gain this knowledge clearly and never go back to that self-ignorance again. So he makes it his all. You can tell from Krishna that his buddhi, his conviction, seems to be toward Atmajnanam. Atmajnanam is what we call sakshat. It is the direct, immediate means for this knowledge. So Arjuna is going to say, so what is wrong with me that you've said over and over that knowledge is the direct, immediate means for this knowledge? Which is true, it is. But you're asking me to just stay in the world and do this karma, this karma of fighting this battle. So then he goes, Vyamishrayeneva vakyena buddhim mohayasiva me. He says, my buddhi, my mind here. Buddhi here means my buddhi, could be mind, conviction, knowledge, vritti. You know, so buddhi, you have to take it in the context. So here he says, I'm just looking at the bhasha here just for a minute. So here he says, you know, and he's very polite because he's talking to Krishna. So he says, you know, by what you've said, by the vakyas, by what I've heard you say, you know, it's what you've said by these statements, the statements you've made, they seem to be confusing, contradictory. I don't know whether it's karma that will gain me knowledge or a combination of karma and knowledge, or if it is just knowledge alone, or if it's one way or the other. You have this mohayasi, this is a causal. You have had eva, he says, mohayasi eva. You've, as though you seem to have confused me. That eva means, it seems like you are confusing me, that you're mixing me up, that you're deluding me. You're confusing my mind by these statements which seem to themselves be confused over karma and jnanam, seem to be mixing the two together. So you seem to be confusing my mind by these statements which seem to be confused. It's not just like, Bhagawan, you're confused and you're confusing me. Your words are all, Bhagawan, your words are all confused, and of course they're causing a great deal of confusion in me. Now it's seeming like that, just seems like that for me. I'm experiencing it that way. So he says, then Arjuna says, tadekam vada anischitya. He says, tell me which one of the two, tadekam, which one of them? Is it karma Or is it jnanam? You know, is it karma? Is it karma? For now, it's just karma. Or is it jnanam? Which one? Of the two, tell me one. Of these two, tell me one. Nischitya, very clearly. Make a decision, you know. Having to, actually it says, for yourself, this is a past, indeclinable past participle, that nischitya. So he's saying, having decided, you know, having decided, tell me which one. Which one do you choose of these two? Do you choose karma? Or do you choose jnanam? Tell me clearly. He says, tell me what? Shreyaha, shreyas, ayam apnuyat. Tell me that one by which, Shana, I can gain, I will be able to, potential participle in the first person singular. Tell me that, the ling. Tell me that one by which, you know, I can gain the shreyas. Shreyas is moksha. Shreyas means that which is absolutely good, right? Prayas is that which is desirable. The whole Katha Upanishad begins with this. What is shreyas? What is prayas? Prayas is that which is absolutely good. Prayas is what you desire, but then the gains of those desired objects are always temporary. So what is moksha? Tell me that which is shreyas, which is absolutely good. That doesn't fold in on itself and then end up giving me the opposite. You know, we say that, and the Buddha said, it's famous for this statement, sukha is a dukkha yoni. The sukha, the pleasures that you experience, are just wombs. Yoni means a womb. They're just wombs for suffering, wombs for dukkha. Because out of any sukha, because it's born within samsara, it's time-bound, it is going to go away, leaving me only with dukkha, grieving over the loss of that ananda I was able to enjoy. So any sukha in the world is just a womb for dukkha. Tell me what is shreyas, what is absolute good, my absolute well-being that doesn't automatically, invariably transform itself into dukkha. So tell me, so he says, tell me that. Tell me that by which, having decided which one, having decided which one of these two, tell me that by which I can gain shreyas. So that's Arjuna's question. So this is the question that runs throughout the Bhagavad Gita. And it's something that in fact if this isn't understood, then it's not really possible to even gain moksha. The question itself is not correct. So this is the situation that the whole Gita is centered on, this question actually. The answering of this question clearly until, I think it comes up 6 times throughout the Gita. It's only at the last chapter 18 that Arjuna says, I understand. Now I understand. You know. Because this is our situation. Yourself is already completely present, the Atma, your being. It is already present. It is free from time. Right? So it's not something that can come into being or go out of being. It already is me. So there's no possibility of reaching it. So there's another thing we have to add in here. If myself were to be able to be gained by karma, in the Shastra we look at karma actually can do 4 things. There's 4 categories of what karma can do. Karma can create something. It can make something. Through my actions, I can create or make something. Right? I can also transform something or change something that is made. Something that's here, I can change it, I can transform it. I can also, for something that is here, I can purify it. Right? I can clean it. Like if a mirror is dirty, really dirty, for instance, I can really clean that mirror and make it shiny. I can clean up anything. I can even purify water. you know. So many things. If there's something there that needs to be clean, cleansed, or purified, they can do that with karma. Right? And the last thing, last category, is I can reach something. If something is here in the world to be reached, I can go there, right? So I can actually travel to it. So I can create something, I can transform something, modify it, I can clean it, cleanse it, or I can reach it, okay? And so now say we want to gain moksha, liberation, through karma. So now, how are we going to do that? Are we going to first, say, just gain myself, gain self-knowledge, you know, which is moksha, okay, self-knowledge. So now that would either mean I have to create myself, but I'm already here. So I can't build myself like I can, you know, I can't build myself like I can build a desk or a chair, you know. I can't build a structure and then call it me. That's not going to be possible. And even the very idea of doing that means that I have to be an object in the creation which I can work on, right? But by create means I'm making something. I take some parts and I put them together and I create something. So how can I create myself because I'm already here? That's one thing. How can I, and then the other problem with that, this is a whole problem with even, I'm already here, okay, so I can't create myself, but at least I can, you know, modify myself. I can change myself. I can lose weight. I can do a lot of things with my mind. I can, you know, I can practice yoga. I can do pranayama. I can bring about all kinds of changes. I can change my attitude. All of these things I can do, I can modify. And yes, that is true. We can build things, we can create things, and we can modify things. But how can you modify yourself? Because yourself is not an object for you to work on. Say you're here and I can modify myself, I can make myself much better. That is true for your body, because you can objectify your body and work on it. That is true for your mind, with a karma yoga buddhi, with all of the work we're doing every meditation, changing our attitudes. We can definitely modify our mind. You can cleanse our mind. We can also purify, which is the third one. I can purify my mind. I can modify it. I can modify the way I think. I can make my body more healthy. I can make myself more limber. I can give myself more energy. And I can really learn things. You know, I can adjust my attitudes, you know, I can adjust my knowledge, all of these things. That's true. That's all within the world, the objectifiable world. And so I can modify my upadis. I can purify my upadis. I can purify my mind. I can neutralize raga dvesha. I can do all of these things, you know. I can pray for things. I can affect things. And I can also reach things. I can go places. So can I go travel to myself? Of course, we think that we can through like a meditative experience until I really realize what the self is. Like I need to, in meditation, you know, travel from the little small self. Like people look at it in different ways. I can do an inward journey and reach the big self. The little self can reach the big self and drop into it like a drop into the water. They actually use examples like this. So my little self can go closer and closer and closer, reaching the big self, and then merge into it like a drop merges into water, right? But now, if that's the case, then I have the little self that is objectifiable, right? And how is that little self is the big self also must be objectifiable so that we're in the same order of reality. And this little self, me, has to travel, right? Which also means we have to be in duality because we have to have space there. So even internal space, external space, it doesn't make any difference. It's imagine even in your imagination, little drop A has to go to big pool B, and it has to travel through space, or it has to drop down from a cloud traveling through space. You know, so if little self is going to merge into big self, we have to be within duality, and big self itself has to be into duality. How can little self go into something which does not exist within duality, but is really of a totally different order of reality, which is my condition? I am not an object in space, right? Space can't touch me, you know. Water can't wet me. The knife can't cut me, you know. The wind can't dry me. Why? It can cut and dry and do all of that to anything in the world. Why can't it do it to me? In this world, all of the elements can interact and affect everything except for space. That's why space is such a good illustration. All of these things take place in space and they all affect each other. In your imaginal world, the imaginal knife in your imaginal world can cut things in that imaginal world, but it can't cut things in this world. The imaginal wind can dry out, you know, the imaginal imaginal water or imaginal liquid and turn everything to ash. It can do that in the imaginal world, but that's not going to seep over into this world. So when you're dealing with orders of reality, right, these orders of reality don't cross over into each other. You might learn from your dreams and that type of thing, but that order of reality affects only things within itself. And that's even within duality. The dream is dual. This physical world is dual. But the dream world is what we call pratibhasika. It's a subjective order of reality. It's mitya, but it's a subjective mitya. This world is also mitya, but it's an objective mitya. So these things don't touch each other. See? What about me? What about the self who is here, who cannot be objectified? This is just, it's not that anybody would be expected to know this. This is something that has to be understood. Oh, yeah, I can't be objectified, you know. You wouldn't even be thinking about it one way or the other. It has to be recognized, the fact of it. If I'm objectified, I have a subject-object relationship with something that is myself, we'll say, well, who's the one doing the objectification, right? Who's the one because of whom this thing is known? You know, that subject-object relationship. So that's not really yourself. You have to go back to the me that is not, can't be made into an object. If it can be made into an object, then that me, the thing that you're calling me, is really only an upadhi. You take it to be yourself because of ignorance. But it can't be yourself because it's objectified. And if it's objectified, it exists within time and space. And then these ideas of, you know, it's already there, I'm already here, so I'm not going to create it, but I can modify it, I can purify it, I can reach it, you know. And so then karma becomes something which is really valuable. I need karma in order to get to myself. But then you say, no, no, it's not quite like that. It could be more like this. I need to reach myself so that I can know it. This is what most people think. I need to reach myself so that I can know it. So let me give you an example of that. In order for me to know myself, I first have to experience myself. That's why we think this, because in the world, that's how knowledge works. I first have to gain a thought modification through my means of knowledge, through my pramanas, to give me a thought modification, right, of whatever it is I need to know. Like, say, for instance, I hear that Jesper loves gongs and he has some gongs here, okay? I have no idea, I've never seen his gong, and then he takes me and he shows me, here are just a couple of my gongs, okay? These are my gongs. And then he shows me all about the gongs, which now I'm experiencing. I didn't have an experience of these gongs before. Now, using my eyes, I have an experience of them. And so now he can talk about them and he can tell me all about them and I know what they are. Of course, when I look away, now it's just a matter of memory. I'm not having an experience of the gongs anymore, because to have an experience of the gongs, a direct, immediate experience of these gongs, I have to see them. Right? I have to see them. Now I have an experience of them. This is how we think of knowledge. First, you have to have the experience, and then you can understand all about that experience. Otherwise, it's just what we call indirect knowledge. Like, say, I've never had an experience of the gongs, but Jasper tells me all about it. So now, what they look like, he describes it all to me. He even kind of talks about with the resonating sound that they make when you hit it with a mallet. He describes everything to me. And now I have an indirect knowledge, an indirect understanding of what a gong is. You know, but it's only indirect. But in the world, the great majority of our knowledge is indirect. We go to school, you know, we don't have to recreate the wheel like over and over and over again. We understand how it was created, what it is, and now we experience the, you know, the development of the wheel, all of these type of things. But we don't always have to go back to square one. We're standing on the shoulders of other people's direct, immediate experience through vritti-jnana. Vritti-jnana means I have the direct, immediate experience of the gong, and now I'm learning about the gong, and I can teach you about the gong. But what about all the millions of people that don't have access to a gong? They have to read about it and understand it. That's indirect knowledge. That's what most of us, the great majority of our knowledge is that. But here, do you think that indirect knowledge of yourself is what we're talking about? Or do you think that you need to have a subject, or can even have a subject-object experience of yourself, so that then you really know what I'm talking about? You need to objectify the self, like you objectify the gong, and then whatever the teacher has to say about that will be landing on the self that you've recognized. That'll be making sense. So let's first gain this experience of the self, which we have to gain, and it's not here right now, right? And so I need to travel. I'm going to have to travel to that experience through a meditative experience, perhaps, where I make myself, my mind subtler and subtler and subtler until it is able to have this experience of the self. And then, of course, my mind closes over. It's come back from that experience, right? But at least I've had the experience, and then the teacher can talk about it. I'll say something like this. But that's not possible. That's not possible for me to be an experience that I have through any type of objectification, subject-object objectification. That's not possible, because I'm the one for whom that experience is. And that means that I should be here. I am here. I'm not somewhere else internally. So of course I'm not somebody else, somewhere else out here. I know that. But then you think, but I need to have a meditative experience, which itself is a type of travel. You know, I, little me, has to have an experience of big me. The little jiva self has to have an experience of the big self. The instant you say these words, which are there in all of so much literature, little self and big self, means the little self takes up only a little bit of space, and the big self takes up a lot of space, right? And so like the little drop of water, I have a fall into the big self. But that means, who's here now? Who am I? And that's, so none of this is going to, it's not going to work, because the whole world of karma can work for what you objectify. And so you have to say, I can objectify myself. I can be an object to myself. And if I'm an object to myself, subject-object relationship, I must exist within space. Otherwise, you can't have a subject-object relationship. If you're outside of time and space, there is no subject-object, because there's no space to have that division between time and space. And so you can't say even that it's not one or the other. So Arjuna asks, you know, is it karma or is it jnanam? Which is it? You know, that will give me moksha, that will give me self-knowledge. I think you've said it's only knowledge. How does karma come in? Oh, maybe I need karma and knowledge. And that way I use karma to purify myself, to modify myself, you know, to reach myself, all of these type of things. So is that what it is? You know? It doesn't even look to me like it, what Arjuna can say in the commentary. I don't even think that's what you're saying. To me, what you're saying is knowledge. And you're sending me to do karma. And so I'm feeling really confused, you know? And underneath it, I think you're confused. Maybe, Bhagavan, maybe you are confused. Because I want knowledge. And please tell me. He asked it, please tell me. And so here, this kind of opens up, even with all of the Upanishads and the Gita itself, the difference between the Karmakanda and the Jnanakanda, this whole world of what can karma do and what can jnanam do. So here, Bhagavan has to really explain all of this to Arjuna. And he had even started out in the beginning of chapter 2, and now we're looking at it again, saying that in the beginning, and we'll see this verse from Krishna now, he says, in the beginning, you know, told by me, means me, because Krishna is usually talking as Ishwara, given by me, were two paths for Shreyas, for gaining Shreyas, for gaining moksha. One is what we call Buddhi Yoga. It's the path, or Sankhya Yoga. It's the path of knowledge. It's the path of sannyasa. The other path is Karma Yoga. These two paths are the two options that you have, really, for gaining sannyasa. For gaining sannyasa, sannyasa is atmajnanam. Sannyasa really means sarva karma sannyasa. Jnanam itself, self-knowledge, is sarva karma sannyasa, the renunciation of all karma. So in the end, jnanam brings about the renunciation of all karma. And so by all karma, that, to say that, that is actually impossible. By either karma yoga or jnana yoga, there cannot be the renunciation of all karma from the standpoint of anything that exists within time and space. And so if I'm bringing about the renunciation of all karma, there's only one possibility of being able to do that, and that has to do with recognizing my being as being intrinsically free of all karma. So in order for me to be a sarva karma sannyasi means renunciate, of all karma, sarva karma, of all karma, is can only take place by recognizing that my being, which is not an object, it's not an object in the creation, which is not objectifiable, is a sarva karma sannyasi. That is my nature. I am one who is free of all karma, period. I have always been free of all karma, and I always will be free of all karma, because I'm not an object within duality to be changing or to breathing, blinking. Blinking is a karma. Breathing is a karma. Eating is a karma. Your whole body is performing tons of karma at all times. You're changing from one attitude to another is a karma. How can you be free of karma? How can you even get up? How can you blink? How can you have water? No. Those are all karmas. We're saying sarva karma sannyasi. The only person who's a sarva karma sannyasi who recognizes that the self, my being, is sarva karma, is free of all karma. So that sarva karma sannyasa, you can never gain by karma. Right? How can you gain sarva karma sannyasa by karma? That's not possible, you know. Are you going to use karma to get rid of all karma? You're stuck. You're stuck in duality. There's no possibility of that. The only way you can gain that atmajnanam, that's the knowledge of the self, is through knowledge of yourself. And that what that means is to even be able to gain knowledge of yourself as the one who is free from all karma, you already have to be free from all karma. If you're not already free from all karma, then you're existing within duality, within time and space, where change can take place. And so either you are a sattva karma sannyasi, one who is completely free of all karma, or you're not. And so if you are intrinsically not free of all karma, no amount of knowledge will make you that. Because knowledge is not dependent on doing, on what you do. It's not dependent on the karta or the person, the subject. It's dependent on the object. What I mean by that object, the object of knowledge, right? For something to be knowledge, to have knowledge of something, it has to be true to the object of knowledge. Here the object of knowledge is my own being, right? And so to have knowledge of my own being, and to say, be able to say that my being is a sattva karma sannyasi, knowledge can't make that happen, right? Knowledge is not a karta. Knowledge is not a doer. Knowledge takes place through a pramana, through a means of knowledge, where you recognize the reality of something. And so I need to recognize the reality of my being. And that being already has to be that. Because knowledge isn't going to change what is, it's going to reveal what is. To change, now we have to get what is. We have to get within duality where we have instruments of change, right? We can create something, we can modify something, we can purify something, we can reach something. That's what we can do with karma, you know? So we can make all kinds of changes. But do you think that, like, knowing the pieces of wood is going to build the house? Yes, I have very clear knowledge of all of the pieces of wood. I have knowledge of all of the nails and all of these things. We're trying to build little houses at the farm. So yes, I have knowledge of all of the instruments and all of the equipment. It's all there. It's clear, clean. All right. Now, what do you get out of that? You get knowledge. You don't get the house. You get knowledge. You know all of these things. To get the house, you have to put all those things together and you have to do things and you have to build. That's what it is. You know, it takes karma. But now, karma, in reference to myself, how is that going to transfer over into that which is free of time and space? You know, how can karma cross over into me that is non-objectifiable and free of time and space? That can't happen. So now it's a question of gaining knowledge. So knowledge is what is necessary, whether you're a mumukshu, whether you're a karma yogi, whether you've taken the sannyasa lifestyle, as we'll see later on, if you've taken the sannyasa lifestyle. Oh, I've got more time. I was on the 11? 11, okay. I got it. Okay. So, whether you take a karma yoga lifestyle or you take a sannyasa lifestyle, a renunciate lifestyle, still, it's only knowledge that is going to free you of the ignorance which has caused you to take yourself to be an object within the creation. The only knowledge, because Either you're a Sattva Karma Sannyasi, you are free of all karma, your being is not objectifiable, like that, it doesn't exist within time and space, or not. And so if you are that, then the Upanishads can reveal that for you as a means of knowledge. So the problem is, why is Bhagavan always talking about karma and making Arjuna? This is making Arjuna go to the, you know, go and fight this war. When the whole first part of the Gita, he's always talking about the self as being something which is absolutely free and changeless. So many verses, you know, and always praising knowledge, because knowledge is the means. It is the means for liberation. It is the direct, immediate means for liberation. But there's another issue. And the other issue is that my mind is the one that has to gain this knowledge. And my mind is existing within time and space, as my body, mind, sense organs, I am existing within time and space. And I have picked up all kinds of notions and hurts and pains and raga dveshas. And so my mind itself needs to become a receptacle for this knowledge. Because actually when knowledge takes place, you need a pramana, and you need a pramana, a means of knowledge, and you need your mind, right? Pramana is not going to work without your mind. And Swamiji always jokes about that, but it's true for all of the pramanas. You've noticed, like, say if you've noticed, if you're like for me, if I'm driving to work, hopefully I've been watching the road, because I will come back from my own daydream and realize I'm driving. And I've done just fine, but I'm really not using, you know, my eyes. Swamiji will talk about, like, right now, maybe somebody's daydreaming right at this moment, you know. And so I'm blah, 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 in the way, wielding this pramana so beautifully. And then you see the student, like, this Swamiji will do this much more dramatically than me, but he'll go like this. that's what the teacher sees. Somebody's just zoned out. They're zoned out. Means they're with their mind, right? They're with their mind. Your mind is necessary. To gain even relative knowledge, your mind has to be there. You know? It has to have the capacity to sit with something also. Like when the knowledge, say, even if you're in school and the teacher is giving a lecture, your mind has to be available, which it usually, I mean, mine very rarely was. My body was available. That was about it. And my mind was doing things I was interested in. You know? And so I didn't hear, I heard maybe 5% of the lecture normally, you know, because I was not interested at all. So it's saying here, say somebody's not a mumukshu, or there's not that teacher-student relationship or that shraddha in the Upanishads, and you can be sitting, your body is here, but your mind is not here. And so nothing is happening. So for the pramana to work, your mind has to be available. And now the mind has to be available to gain, to recognize that which is most subtle. Yourself, which is most subtle. Yourself is even more subtle than space, because you objectify space. So that which is not an object in the creation, but is the very me, that is totally as though, from the standpoint of the mind of any person before they get knowledge, is totally mixed up with all of the experiences that you objectify, including your thoughts and your emotions and your perceptions and the knower. There's an adhyasa, a total superimposition there. And so say your mind is engaged in all of your raga dveshas, you know, and all of the things that need to be done, and how am I going to get this, and I need this amount of money to be able to do this. And so your mind is, whatever the raga dveshas are in your mind, that's taking your energy. That's where your mind just follows the raga dveshas. And the negative raga dveshas, it's buzzing around, how am I going to change that, you know? positive ones, how am I going to gain that? So your mind is just engaged doing that, and then hear all this flow of words coming at you, you know? And you're only hearing this and that and this and that. Okay. Because that shantavritti is not there. And so, and if it is, the knowledge that actually is just pouring in, you know? So how to make this mind within duality have a relative shanti so that it can be a receptacle of this knowledge, you know, of myself. That's all this is. That is Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is not trying to give you self-knowledge. That's not what it's about. Karma Yoga is trying to give you a mind which is available for self-knowledge. And that mind is necessary to gain self-knowledge. And so if the mind, that receptacle is not available because of raga, dvesha, and complexes and all of this kind of stuff, it's not available for this teaching. And so the Karma Yoga helps your mind gain that relative shanti, and it's so brilliant. It helps your mind to gain a shanti which is, for all practical purposes, identical with the shanti that a jnani has. For all practical purposes, because it neutralizes the raga dveshas so that my mind is clear and clean and relaxed. That prasada buddhi, which is exactly what the mind of a jnani is. Right? So the only difference is that the mind of the body, there maybe there's a hair's breadth of difference because the mind of the jnani is totally resolved into Ishwara. There's not any this kartritvam, the sense of doership, and I have to do this and I have to do that. That's gone. It's mithya completely. So that's really not there. So that gives a deeper sense of relaxation, perhaps. But it's as close as it could possibly be. Right? And so the Karma Yoga, Bhagavan says, I've given these two paths, these two nishtas, means these two committed lifestyles, you know. One is for the sannyasi, and as Swamiji talks so much about this, and you'll see if you read his, the Gita Home Study. The jnani, the sannyasi, is the one who has given up your field. The sannyasi is the one who all you want to do is just be with the shastra. And you just want to study and be with yourself. And that's it. There's nothing else. It can even end up just being with yourself. There's no raga dvesha. There's nothing of any significance to that you have to contend with. The sannyasi, the one who has chosen the sannyasi lifestyle, has already gone through that karma yoga, either in a last life, and they died right when their mind was almost mature and totally, you know, with this knowledge, and they have to pick up the thread when they're born. Or in this life itself, you have whatever amount of shanti you have, and whatever you don't have is sadhana, and the sadhana is karma yoga, resolving these likes and dislikes, so that I have the shanti that is required in my mind, upaya nishta. You know, I have a commitment to gaining that upaya, that receptacle, that which is the means, you know, the means for gaining this knowledge. Because the brahmana can be working, but the mind isn't available. And so the karma yoga comes first to give you the mind that is available for that sattva karma sannyasa, for the recognition of myself as being free from all karma. So I can move to sannyasa, but either the mumukshu, I'm the karma yogi, or the sannyasi, both have to gain knowledge. But one has taken sannyasa in order to have a lifestyle like Arjuna wanted. I just let me do shravana manana nididhyasana. That's all. Do some, you can You can teach, you can have satsang, but that's what you do. And anything else is really out of the bounds of sannyasa. So that's what I do. I'm just, everything is a satsang for me. Everything is just this knowledge. That is my life. And so that's wonderful. But you can't go from being a warrior who's getting ready to go out and slay a whole bunch of people who are doing a dharma to the satrika buddhi, you know. So we can't just shift from one to the other. You grow into that sannyasa lifestyle. You know? So growing into that sannyasa lifestyle, that's natural. And then the really beautiful thing is, if you grow into that sannyasa lifestyle, whether you're here amidst all kinds of things going on, or you're under a tree, you have the shantavritti. You are with yourself. And this is my forest, or the forest is my forest. See what I mean? That's how it's got to be. So when I said this the other day, when Swamiji told me, "But no, can't leave your job. Because, you know, this has to be your forest. You know, your mind has to be available here itself. Because if it's not available here itself, when you go to the forest, your mind is still going to be doing all, having all of the worries, all of the concerns that it normally has here with these people. And then you think, yeah, but if I get rid of all these people and get rid of the whole thing, go to the forest, then my mind will be free and clear. But you know what? It's not like that. Because you create that same mind creates these dualities and these raga dveshas in the forest itself, you know? And so then there's, you know, this sadhu over here who's chanting too loudly, you know. And this city, the Rishikesh, which keeps getting closer and closer and closer to my kutir, and these people who are swimming in the Ganga, they're not supposed to swim in the Ganga, these people are swimming in the Ganga, there goes my mind, because I am still, you know, focus, I still have raga dvesha, and that's how my mind operates. So it takes a while for that transformation to take place, even as I'm gaining knowledge. So the mumukshu and the jnani, both, and the sannyasi, both are gaining knowledge. Both are doing shravana. Both are mumukshus. But as Bhagavan says, you'll see as we go through this, one has a field of experience in order to neutralize all these raga dveshas, and the other one can be very frustrated. You know what they say? What I remember Brahma Prakashananda said this in her ashram in Nagpur. Swamiji got that beautiful ashram and asked Swami Brahma Prakashananda to take that over. So she has for several years. She's been running course after course after course there. So she said, I have to keep all my students really engaged and busy. Otherwise, they'll sleep. Yeah, because they don't have anything to do. You know, they're not kept busy with it. So she's a taskmaster. You know, if they're not kept busy, you know, then when they're sitting there in their room, do you think that they'll meditate or just be with themselves? No, because their minds too engaged with too many other things, and then those other things that the mind is engaged in aren't there to be done. And so then what I do is just go to sleep. So sleeping is a big thing in the world of sannyasa, or the world of the ashram. I just go to sleep, you know, because my mind doesn't have anything to do. Of course it has, you could just be studying, you could be contemplating, you could be having satsang, there's all kinds of things to do. But your feeling is, I don't have anything to do, you know. Because that's my mind doesn't have that level of sattva yet, you know, where this is what I want to do. So then that gives a lot of frustration to the mind. Whereas if you're in the world, you know, you feel like doing something, you can walk down and get a coffee, or you can take a beautiful walk in the park, or you can go and see a friend. Has lots of things to do, and they're all being done for a mumukshu with that karma yoga buddhi, with that prasada buddhi, which slowly settles the mind down, and the mind becomes very sattvic. So it becomes like Swamiji. I mean, when I first knew him very short, soon, we were sitting in his scooter at the ashram in Poway. And he was just appreciating. He said, "You know, I could just sit here all my life and it wouldn't make any difference at all." And he was serious. He was just reflecting on it. I could just be here my whole life, you know, just sit here, you know, no problem. Sattvika buddhi, you know. But he could also do many things, which he did, you know. He tells a story I think it was in Tiruvannamalai, or it was someplace where one beautiful temple was. And the Swami, every day, he would just go and sit on the sidewalk near the temple. Every day, just for the whole day, he would just sit there and have that asana. That's all he would do, you know. And people would go by, and Swamiji, I think he made up the story, but in how the story goes, he says, people were criticizing him, you know, just sitting there all day long, all day long. Swamiji said, "You try it. You try. You know, get up early in the morning, go take your place, sit there. When the night has come, go to bed." Yeah. That's not something that people can do. That's an incredible tapas. That's an incredible discipline. Why? Because my mind has things, I have things I want to do. So instead of trying to shut all of that down, in the Bhagavad Gita, it has the story of somebody, in a verse form, somebody trying to shut all of that down now that he's taken sannyasa. So he goes and sits under the tree, and just to stay there. And he's just meditating the whole time on what's happening with his business, and his wife was able to close the accounts well enough and get it all in the bank, and what are his sons doing? Are they carrying their responsibilities properly? That's the meditation, you know. So it's very, very useful to be gaining this knowledge and respecting the growth of your mind and not trying to jump from arithmetic to calculus, you know. Let the mind mature. And let it mature as it gains knowledge, giving it the field of experience that it needs to do that. You know, it is not healthy or helpful to try to jump over that process, you know, because the mind isn't ready for it. So why are we doing that? Let the mind have the best environment for the natural course that it needs to take for that antakarna shuddhi. And so this is why took Arjuna a long time to get that, to accept it, but Bhagavan held firm, you know, showing in so many different ways why that's what we have to do. So this chapter 3 is really an analysis of that whole thing. So, that's all. Yeah. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.